Hello, I'm Felix.
And this is
Silent Mark Trying His Best.
Hello, Internet. My name is Silent Mark and I'm trying my best. Welcome to this episode 3 of series 3 of the podcast. I hope you're doing well. I want to start off by thanking you, all of you, for listening and for continuing to support. It's really lovely how many people have listened and how many people have supported and said nice things. So thank you for doing so. The numbers, again, may not be huge, but to me, they're a big deal. So thank you very much. Even as I look at the numbers whilst I'm speaking to you, the amount of people we're getting from further afield is amazing. Most of my audience seems to be from America. I've got a few people from the UK, but then I've got Denmark and Brazil. The fuck's listening to me in Denmark and Brazil? Thank you for doing so. On today's show, we have the one and only Mr. John O'Sullivan. John is a comedian, performer. We talk about him, we talk about his work, and all sorts of other bits. I will be back after it, and we will have more of a chat, and then I'll see you all next week. But again, we'll start off. This is it. This is me and speaking to John. Enjoy kind of seeing where they came from.
That's very clear with you. You love a natter.
I do. It's true. It is very true.
I'm going to start this off like, hi, welcome to, have we already started?
We've already started. This is already in.
Hello, we've just started.
We have John O'Sullivan, ladies and gentlemen. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you so much for interrupting my evening.
You're very welcome. You're very welcome. Thank you for coming on it.
You can hear me fine, because this is important, because what's the point otherwise?
Yeah, no, I can hear you perfectly.
Okay.
Yeah, don't you worry.
To all of your follower.
Yes, he's called John and he's a nice man.
Okay, good.
So I want to talk about you. And I know it's going to be weird for you, because I'm guessing you don't talk about yourself honestly much.
When I was younger and a needy gay, still am gay but not so needy, I would be keen to talk about myself the whole entire time. But as I got older, I decided not to talk so much about myself, and I'm more interested in others.
Which you kind of see from the show you do. But I'll talk about that.
I love people and I love hearing what they've got to say. And I just give now people bits that I want them to hear, and that's it. I think I get more private as I get older. When I was younger, I was like, listen to me! I'm a needy twat! But now, not so much. I'm still a twat, I'm just not so needy.
Well, I'm like that exactly now. I am a needy twat.
Yeah.
Very, very much so. Where did your passion for wanting to perform or wanting to make people laugh come from?
I was a weird child, so I wasn't very outgoing at school. I was never the class clown, but I would find the right person or the right group, and I'd make them laugh, or there'd be an auntie at a dinner table at a function that we'd gone to, and I'd be quiet, and then I'd suddenly come out with one-liners, and at the end of the night, she'd think I was a real hoot, and then I just enjoyed showing off, attention seeking, making people laugh however way I did it, whether it was through incredibly silly pratfalls and stunts, to wording, to putting things on my head, to putting faces. And then I watched a lot of comedy. So obviously, I'm 46, so I didn't really go out that much. So my best friend was television. And so I would watch an array of comedy and go, I want to be like him. I want to be like her. I want to do that. And then I went to school and was like, I don't do GCSEs. I don't need them to become an actor or a comedian. And yeah, you do. But because it took a long time for me to become a comedian.
But you, and I need, the yeah. things that you do,
yeah,
from what I've seen, from you, you came relatively big when people were reporting your A boards that you used to do at your.
Yeah, it was. I had a shock. If anyone doesn't know, of course they don't. Most people who listen don't know who I am. But I had a shock too, and I used to. I get very bored easily, and so I like to cause reactions and do naughty things. And I had a billboard outside the museum, and I used to write filth on it. And because it was in a town called Horsham, and Horsham can't deal, you know, it's a Tory town, one of the safest Tory seats in England, so that type of thing. And I used to put those things on the billboard, like Crawley girl gives birth to pitbull. It caused the right old sting. I got threatened with arrest. It ends up in the national newspapers, on the news. And then it just gave me a research. I was like, yeah, I want to do this. So then from that, I sold out at the local Capitol Theatre about a year later. And then that went on to nearly sell out a theatre in Crawley. And I was then ended up doing John Bishop's Britain. Everything at one time over the course of like 2 years was really, I was like, this is heading somewhere. And then depression kicks in. And self-doubt, and I stopped for 5 years. So this is chill.
Well, this is the podcast does deal quite a bit with mental health, as we've spoken about it quite a bit in the past in general. Anyway,
well, I got mixed in. I did a big show at the Capitol at the Horse Theatre, and it was about 800 seats, and it wasn't completely sold out. I was about 40 or 50, but I remember feeling the real achievement of like an absolute. I'm not being doing myself down, but nobody selling out theatres that Jimmy Carr would sell out. Okay, I wouldn't be able to do that all around England. But I was really proud that I wasn't in my town and I was still, you know, I was selling out nearly. And I had a man Facebook me, these in the days before like messages could go into your weird bin if you weren't friends with them. And I opened it up and he was like, how dare you do this show? Who do you think you are? What a load of filth. You're disgusting. You're also unfunny, you know. And I remember that really knocked the earth like that, because on stage, I don't get a thrill from being on stage. I get a thrill from, my shows consist of video. And I used to get more of a thrill sitting on a chair in the wings, hearing people laugh than I would hearing people laugh when I stood on stage. And so I thought I'd done something really good. And then I came after that Facebook message, then the self-doubt came in. I was going, maybe I am shit. Maybe I'm not funny. And so I just gave up. And so that even sort of sets you, you know, on a different path of misery. And so, for a good 5 years, I didn't do anything. Literally didn't do anything. And then it was thanks to Periscope. I used to do these live shows on Periscope. I used to prank call me. And I used to get people watching and following from all around the world. And I was like, yeah, I have still got this. I can still make people laugh. And I continued and then went back to a theatre in Horsham again and sold it out. So, you know, and I can be lazy. That doesn't always help. But I'm now in a happier position to feel like I could conquer anything. Maybe it wasn't what 5-10 years ago, it could have gone somewhere. I really believe that. I really believe it could have gone somewhere if I just kept at it. But you know, you can't help things that go on in your brain, can you? So.
Very, very true. The things you do, though, seem to be to amuse yourself first and then others later. Yeah. Is that a fair assumption?
Yeah, but there is a big part of me that wants to amuse others first in some sense, because as a comedian, you do go. I hope, you know, I want people to find this funny, but as you do get older, you do go balls to it more. You know, the realization that I'm 46, the chances of me ever really having my own BBC One show are slim, let alone Channel 565 on Sky. And so you just think, balls to it. Balls, I'm going to do what I want to do. And I'm not going to conform. I've never been a conformist. So, and I never have in my comedy. My comedy isn't for everyone, and it is, you know, it can be, have moments. 10 years ago, I got away with a lot, and these days, as you well know, Mark, there's a lot of comedians and stuff that don't dare say things or do things, and I still am. I still think there's still a market and a need for comedy that's on the wrong side of, you know, on the right side of wrong, I should say.
Mm.
And I think there is a demand for that. I think there is a demand for Phil. I think that there is a demand for a Roy Chubby Brown, Bernard Manning style comedy. Okay, maybe not so much reliant on the racist thing, but I will take the piss out of anyone, whether you're black, whether you've got a turban on, whether you've got a burqa, whether you're, you know, in a wheelchair. I mean, it sounds awful. I will take the piss, but I won't single anyone out. There is nothing I won't. And that sounds, this probably isn't painting me in a very good light, but there is, I'm not as cruel as I used to be. And I'm not looking to pick people out per se, but I will laugh at a broad, you know, at a broad, on the broad scheme of things.
You'll laugh at people rather than a minority.
Yeah. And I probably doesn't help matters. It probably doesn't, you know, but there is a demand for a comedy where people not say what they want to say, like, I mean, like Bernard Manning or Frankie Boyle. I mean, his was a particularly harsh style. I believe you can get away with murder if you're fairly likable. The trouble with Frankie is that Frankie, when he was doing all that early stuff, not a very likable performer, was he?
No.
He was, the gags were great. Imagine how brilliant it would have been if he'd been likable and endearing. And people go, wow, you know, let him get away with murder. And that's basically what's happened with me. I'm not saying I'm huge or anything, but I think I have got away with a lot because it's not coming from a bad place. It's just a piss take. And we're too afraid at the moment to say anything, do anything, and conform. And I'm like, there are comedians out there like the likes of Roy Chubby Brown. His material isn't always great. Jethro, his material isn't always great. Or like mine isn't always great. But they're selling out theatres. Mm. And there is a demand, there is a, and especially more so at the moment, you know, you go on the Twitter today and it's all, you know, if you say anything out of turn, you're chastised and, you know, you don't have a place. But there is a place for bawdy, you know, dirty humour, the seaside humour that's not fashionable, but you wouldn't see it on telly, but there is a demand for people to come and watch it. But I would say that I'm the one doing.
Well, but you.
What do you think? I mean, you watch it.
I do. You cultivate your own audience, and you have you and Vaughan, who you do Late Night Lockdown with. You have that draw, where yes, what you're saying is foul, but it's hilarious, and it's because it doesn't feel like it's coming from a place of hate. It feels like it's coming from a place of silliness.
It is. I mean, Vaughan has brought out my silly side that I've always wanted to do. And I've brought out, as you well know, quite a naughty side to him. I'd say that my style of comedy has been, I'm not saying it's influenced on him as a performer, but the shows that we've done, it's definitely brought out things that he would never have ever said on, you know, or done. You know, he draws a line at things and he has to tell me off. And sometimes I'm a bit like, oh my God, he said that. But there is, I don't think what we do, there's anything like it out there. That's my opinion. I think there's a lot of comedy duos who are doing the good old fashioned sketches. But this what we do feels like, you know, Little Britain. It is, isn't it? It's like Little Britain style comedy. It's all boo, bum, willy.
Yeah. But it's the thing you guys do is bring the audience in on it.
Well, that's the important. That's the trick, you see, with the show, and has always been with my live stuff, is that stand-up comedy I find really boring. As someone who's been to a theatre, I've been to some of my greatest comedians, and halfway through I've been asleep. Okay, not because they're boring. Theatre's hot. There's a lot of people. It doesn't help. But someone just talking at you for an hour. You know, I went to watch Ricky Gervais, and I absolutely love him. You know, and he's brilliant. But I'd rather watch him for 10 minutes and go, I enjoyed that 10 minutes and go. I would be happy with that. 25 quid, great. I've watched 15 minutes. I can go off home and watch telly. But an hour and a half of someone, unless there is some sort of thing going on. So when I do my live shows, they've always consisted of videos, getting involved with the audience, phone calls. And by doing that, you keep the audience alive because they don't know what's going to happen next. And I think that's really important. I'm also shit at stand-up. And I couldn't imagine myself talking for an hour and a half. But I can but I can do a show for an hour and a half that incorporates everything. And again, no one's doing anything like that.
Not they're the moment, just not. Definitely not. Definitely not. And as you've seen, there's a market for it. Where did... So with the Lake Night lockdown, was that out of necessity for you to keep your head?
Yeah, that was sane. That was a realization, because I've done lives on Facebook for years, but like sporadically. Mm. And the realization on the 23rd of March 2020 that everyone is going to be at home, which means that everyone's going to be looking at their phone. So the day after lockdown, or the day before, I can't remember what it was, I decided to do a Facebook Live show, which was just a hello. And then it sort of, quite a lot of people watched, and I was like, well, let's do this regularly. And so I then got a mobile, the sort of mobile that a drug dealer would use, you know, one of those nasty ones. And then I got people to ring me, and then I was like getting propped. And then Vaughan wasn't involved in that. It just wasn't. And then Vaughan would come on as himself, and then we would have a character involved, which is Jam, you know, James Arthur's mum. And just improvisation. The whole show is a half an hour of improvisation. But the phone calls, the text, getting people involved. And I think that's where a lot of comedians are going to really fall foul, or have done, and will continue to do so, is that we don't want to watch a comedian standing in his bathroom doing his set. It's fucking boring. Like, fucking boring. I knew that if I got people involved from at home and made it feel like their show, and it worked for me on Periscope, and it works from here, then you're onto a winner, because you've got the interactivity is so key. And we all know what it's like when we were younger, or when we used to ring up a radio station, go, can I have a shout out? The importance of even your being able to say hello to your friend on the radio, or a text being read out, is still with us today, and on social media. So obviously we can't read out every comment. And, you know, because we're trying to do everything. We take phone calls, read texts, read WhatsApp, laughing at ourselves. You know, it is a crazy an hour, but it was the best idea that I could come up with, because up until that point, Vaughan and I hadn't decided what we were doing as a duo. Mm. And we were just trading off his character on Vic and Bob, and I was a comedian. I was like, well, how does it blend? It, you'll get people coming to watch it because you're Vaughan, and then people will look at me and go, well, it's hardly Vic or Bob. So then, because of this show, it's as you well know, characters have evolved, and we've now can go on stage as a double act and feel confident with what we do. Whether people like it, who knows? So yeah, it's been the lockdown show has. If it hadn't been for the lockdown, I don't think Vaughan and I's comedy would have progressed. I think we would have written stuff, done stuff, but it wouldn't. We've got a live format now, which we didn't have. Lockdown's been brilliant for me. I've loved every moment of
it. You seem to have got a bit of a community as well going on. The people who are involved in your show are now involved with other people. And as someone that's in that community, I've now got friends due to you and Vaughan being completely wrong.
It's true. And it is, I mean, most of you are fucking people.
Oh, yeah. Well, we are fucking awful.
Yeah. I mean, if there was ever the kids that sat at the front of the bus, you know, you're never the cool kids at the back. Front ones, you know, at the front, that's all you lot. Mm-hmm. That's all of us. They're sat on the front. We're never quite the back. And it's really nice to see that everyone's like, you go onto people's Facebooks and they're friends because of the show. And there's about a real core of about 20, but there's about 50 who sort of have stuff to do with each other separately, stuff you may not know about, but I do. Mm. So it is quite nice that, and it has, I know that the show has been important to a lot of people. It's been important to myself as well. Vaughan doesn't give a shit. You know what Vaughan's like, he pulls off the wig at the end of the night, goes upstairs and watches telly, whereas I'm there at the end of the night, writing stuff down, looking at tweets, looking at texts, going, oh my God, did that work? You know, doing myself in. But yeah, it's been nearly a year. And I can honestly say it's been hard going. We cut the show down from an hour to half an hour because it was just too much. And I'd rather have Vaughan there, who's not always very well. I'd rather have Vaughan there for a really good half an hour than him there stretching out for an hour and feeling like shit afterwards because he's not well. So, yeah, you're still there. I mean, how long have you been watching? A year? No, not a year.
I think I started in about June.
Yeah, because it really took off.
Yeah, I'd been aware of you because I'd seen a couple of Vaughan's tweets. And then yeah. I think one day I was just bored and I clicked on it and then I watched it and I thought, oh, this is a place where I belong because of how foul it was and because it was all, you know, willies and bums and stuff like that. And don't get me wrong, I like clever comedy as well. But sometimes there is a place for just knob gags galore.
But there is nowhere, there is, you turn on the telly, where is there for that? There isn't anything.
There's nowhere.
It's all political correct comedy. It's all, you know, it's still political to some extent. And there is a lot of funny sitcoms out there, don't get me wrong. But the nearest thing that, I'm not a big fan of Lee Francis, I love some of his work. But you've got Little Britain and Beau Selector, mm-hmm. all really big, like people love that type of comedy. It's still there, but no one's putting that sort of stuff on, you know. You would never see a bear now on Channel 4 getting an erection with a man. You know, it's just, it's astonishing because there is a demand for it. The more you hide it away, the more you hide it off the telly, the more people come looking for it elsewhere, you know.
It does seem like when lockdown's over and you get to start doing your live shows, is that going to change the format much or are you just going to develop on what you've already got?
Well, if you look at Vic and Bob, their shows were just half an hour of nonsense. Mm. There was no beginning, middle, and end. It was catchphrases, stupidity, big props, small props, daftness, songs. Mm. It'll be that. You know, I'm never going to be clever about what we put together. I mean, it will be cleverly put together, but I know what people want. You know, I mean, it is balls hanging out of my shorts while singing a song. It's with a straight face going up to people in the audience. It's just literally mind-numbingly switch your brain off, just enjoy what's going on in front of you. And it will be outrageous and it will be awful. And
I can't wait.
Hopefully funny. Hopefully it'll be funny.
It will be. Yeah. It will be. And I'm guessing the first show that you do, there are going to be a lot of those 20/50 people down there, wherever you're doing it. Because it's,
we built up. I mean, I think this time around in the lockdown, the December lockdown, has taken its toll on a lot of people, more so than, and understandably so. So there isn't the huge sort of like viewings that we had in the summer when I don't think as much. But we're only on half an hour, so it's difficult to tell afterwards. But we used to get, you know, some shows we get. Now, afterwards, because you look at the things and you can see how many people have slipped in. And sometimes we'd get 3,000 or 4,000. Doesn't mean they've watched it all. They may have only watched 30 seconds, but I don't care. I'll take a view. Whereas this time round, it's sort of like you get 500, 600, 700, but we're only on for half an hour. And the sharing side of it is different now. But on average, you see like 35, 40, 50, 60 like coming up, but they're not the same people who are watching it. From beginning to end, you know, people have got low concentration. So I don't think it has a bigger buzz as it did last summer. But I don't know if that's us or whether that's just what's going on. You know, people just, you know, there's only so many times they can laugh at me with my prosthetic balls straight across my mouth. I don't know.
It's always funny. Don't do yourself down. That is always funny.
But if you've noticed, right, up until from about May till like August with Jam, I got really bored. By about October, I was like, oh, we're doing the same sound effects on the keyboard, the same thing. And it felt tired. And I wanted some time off because I was doing sometimes like 5-6 shows a week, sometimes. And an hour long, which, you know, I know it's not a 12-hour day working in a shop. I've done 12-hour day working in a shop, but mentally to suddenly come alive at 10 o'clock at night ruins the rest of your night afterwards. You don't go to bed at 11:30. You know, and so what were we talking about? Oh my God, my brain's gone.
The people that were listening to you and you were saying
that it's we got bored. So I gave it a rest for Christmas, really. And then, as you well know, in January, I think it's come back with more of a bang again.
Yeah.
I don't know about you. You know, we've got a new character. We've got two characters now. You know, and it's happened naturally. And it for me, as long as you see me laughing, you know that I'll be here doing it. The moment I stop laughing at Vaughan or stop or genuinely have a look of anger on my face all the way through, that's when you call it time again.
Yeah.
And then you go off and you refigure it and then come back.
Well, it's gone really well. And from it, you've started with a sitcom pilot. I want to talk about that for a second, if I may.
Yeah.
Because I watched it and it's surprisingly beautiful from you two.
Yeah, but that is a sitcom that we did for the BBC, a BBC writer's competition.
Right.
And it is the opposite. That's what I like about it. It's the opposite of what everyone would watch, what you would watch, you know, and it is. The idea is I am a carer for a guy that's not very well, who eventually becomes even iller as the series goes on. And we just did like a taster thing. And we're doing another one in a couple of weeks, which I wasn't entirely happy with everything I did. Whereas Vaughan is going to be like his character from Vic and Bob. And there's Lucia, who plays Tiana Lee, who's quite a well-known northern sort of singer-stroke comedian. And there's me, who didn't really have too much of a character, but a lot of people liked it, and we're changing the premise of the sitcom to the same thing, but making it more, because before it had a darker edge to it, and this time we've decided to change it, make it a bit like, you have to always compare something, because it helps people deal with it, but like Car Share or The Royal Family.
Right.
The idea is it's going to have that sort of feel where not really a lot happens, but the characters, but there is slapstick. We're filming one, hopefully, like a new one in about 2 or 3 weeks, which will be the one that I will happily send out. I just felt like I was shitting it. I did that thing where I was shit. I look like a fraud. I don't feel like I was good. So they were very natural. I didn't feel anything.
For me, I thought you were playing you. Everything you did in that felt like it was genuinely from you. It didn't feel like it was you. Yeah. It felt that mischievous and that with an edge of he's good, but he's also very shit at what he does.
Mm.
It had that through line through it. And I thought it was really nice because
did you enjoy it, to be honest?
No, I really did. Really did. Yeah. Because the chemistry between the three of you was lovely. Showing how, and I loved the idea that you were given this award, but you are so obviously not good at your job.
Yeah.
And I love that about it, that kind of the praise when it's not deserved. And you keep on showing why it shouldn't be deserved.
Yeah.
Like, you go off for an ice cream for everyone and then come back, eat most of yours and then chuck it in the bin. And that's it. That's it done.
Yeah. Get the others up.
Yeah.
Because the idea that my character is selfish. And so I would always be like, basically like, a bit like the friend. You know what I mean? Like the arsehole. But you sort of audience will hopefully like it. We've come up with a really good idea for the one that you've seen. It can get sent out, but the one that we're doing, this will be the official taster 15-minute idea that we want to get right and send it out. And I think it's got mileage. You know, Vaughan is disabled in real life, you know, so we're not taking the piss out of somebody who's not disabled.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we can get away with more gags about him being disabled in it. It's got a real northern feel, but there's obviously the southernness with me. So, you know, it's, and the idea is that we're going to continue doing it like a documentary. Because I think there's a lot of mileage in that. I think, you know, and I think, yes, it's only been done with this country, is it called, this country? But it's been done for years. The Office is partially that, you know. So I think it's a formula that if people buy into the characters, they'll buy into the idea. Yeah. I think people go to the original idea to do a mockumentary. But as long as it's funny, who gives a fuck?
True. Very true.
And I want to do something that is completely opposite to what we do, which is Pooh, Bum and Willy. Now, I'm glad you like the taking care thing. Do you think that's got mileage?
Definitely. Definitely. Because, again, it is, having a laugh with that, with a subject matter that is on the edge of becoming offensive, but because it's done with love and affection because of fun, it will, I think it's got a lot of mileage. You can do a lot with it.
Yeah, that's that. But how are we going to end this one?
We'll end this. So what I want to do now, John, is I want to ask you how people watch the shit show and how people look at what you've done. And also, I want a copy of one of your old newsagent provocateur shows. Because I really want to see...
The cameraman, the guy who filmed, I've got a show. But because I felt so negative about what happened with that guy, apart from the videos, I hid everything. Because I was like, God, is it shit? But there is footage. I will get it. And it was... but what was the question, Mark?
Where can people get hold of you? And where can people see the shit show?
So... Right, so you can watch me on Facebook with Vaughan.
Yes.
And you can go to my Facebook account, John O'Sullivan, and I think there's a picture of me with my delicious Tippex tea and a pink sweatshirt. That's me there on Facebook. Then you can go to Twitter and go to newsagent provoc John O'Sullivan. And if you want to find me on Grindr, I'm the one with the big black 10-inch cock with my...
And is that a real one, or is that what one you wish?
That's one I wish. No, I don't. If you want to find me on Instagram, it's News Agent of Doctor. I mean, no one is, Mark. No one. I mean, no one. I challenge anyone to have listened to this and suddenly go, do you know what? He's bored on. He's dribbled on. Self-indulgent, query old wanker. I'm not listening to him. He sounds like an arrogant tosspot.
Here we go with the self-deprecating bullshits.
Yeah, I know.
Stop that bollocks. I'm gonna make sure at least one person follows you. You're gonna get at least one from this.
Really? Do you reckon?
Yeah. I've got a small
as long as they're about sort of 25, chavvy.
Have you seen me? Do you think I hang around with those people? There we go. That was my interview with John O'Sullivan. I want to thank John for taking time out. I had to edit that because there were a few times where audio and stuff went off, and I do apologise for the audio. It sounded good when we were recording it, but for some reason it hasn't converted properly. But not down to anyone but me and my uselessness. Thank you, John, for that interview. It was lovely, and yeah. It was only short. I could have genuinely spoken for another hour about all of it. Hopefully we'll be able to, we'll have another chat at some point. Please go and try and find their live shows. Go and find the Late Night Lockdown. Go and find John and Jam. Go and search on Facebook for the John and Jam show. Most of it's posted on there. The community that we've got there, I'm putting myself in that, the community we've got there and the show that they do is tremendous. So please go and support them. Do follow him and just prove him fucking wrong, because he deserves it. Next week, I already have an interview in the bag. It's already recorded. It's already nearly edited, which is good. So it may be done next week. It may be done in 2 weeks. Because I think that having the 2 week gives me more time to be able to get some content and also gives you time to listen to it, so you don't have to do it all in 1 week and get bored. So we do speak to Dog Park Dissidents in the next interview, which will be very good. So apart from that, thank you all very much for listening. Thank you for supporting. Keep supporting. Keep chucking my name out places. Because it'd be lovely for you to do so. Otherwise, I will see you all soon. Thank you very much for your time. I love you, and here is Pops. Bye.
Silent Mark Tries His Best was thought of and presented by Silent Mark. The cover photo was taken by Tony Knox at Alpha Omega Wrestling. The music was by my Uncle John's band, Weird Atlas. Go to patreon.com/silentmark to support putting me through school. My name is Silent Flops. Love you, bye.
Duck up.